BMW Financial. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Berger. If it pleases the court, I have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Would the court like a recitation of the facts?
No, what we're really interested in is the remedy you're seeking.
That is interesting, because obviously at this point, post the Superior Court decision, the BMW itself has actually been sold. There are two things. Number one, the Replevin action included a claim for damages, which was set out in a number of different ways.
How would you characterize what happened to that? Because as I read the record, that wasn't ruled on. And if it's still pending in the Superior Court, then what we have here is an impermissible interlocutory appeal, which we could simply dismiss this appeal and remand it to the Superior Court to address your damage claim. If the damage claim was never made, then you'd have to file another action for damages. But it would be helpful for us to know whether, in fact, you did ask for damages in the alternative in the Superior Court and it wasn't addressed, and therefore this case should be remanded so that it can be addressed.
I did ask for damages for loss of use of the vehicle, for improvements that Mr. Goodman had made after the purchase, or Ms. Goodman and Ms. Richards had made after the purchase, interest, attorney's fees, and costs, but certainly those two areas of damages.
Well, then what's your position with respect to whether this is an interlocutory appeal that should be dismissed and the matter should be remanded?
I had not considered that, Your Honor. It appears to me that all of us assumed that the Superior Court dismissed the entire matter. It was, on Mr. Davis's part, a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. In that, BMW, even though it had possession of the vehicle, had a contract right to dispose of it. So it appeared to me at the time that all pending matters were disposed of.
Your view of what happened then is that the court dismissed the claim on its merits.
Well, I don't mean to. Is the court drawing a distinction between claim and case? My understanding, and I believe Judge Tolliver's
understanding. Well, it dismissed the case because there was no claim.
Yes. There was no legitimate claim against BMW within the context of the complaint.
For damages or any other remedy?
That is correct, Your Honor. Although I agree, Justice Holland, that at no time did any of us specifically ask the question or address the question in the Superior Court.
Well, we've had cases from Chancery, for example, where someone's asked for a specific performance, and specific performance was denied on the conveyance of the property, and then nothing else was said, and the alternative claim was for damages, and we've held that that's an interlocutory appeal, and the court needs to decide the damage claim. But at least when I was reading the Superior Court opinion, it wasn't clear to me that it had also considered and ruled against you on the claim for damages.
You are correct. That was not explicitly addressed. As I say, we all assumed that it was part of the court's ruling.
Well, why don't you go ahead with whatever argument you had in mind?
Well, Your Honor, the problem here is that if the Superior Court decision stands, essentially Goodman and Richards are denied a remedy for the statutory right that's created by Title 16, Section 4784. In other words, they have the right under the statute to expect that anything that is seized because it is drug proceeds or connected or used to facilitate in some way a drug transaction, that asset will be held, as the statute requires, by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and that the Secretary has no authority to release that property to anyone absent an order of the Superior Court. And
so by releasing the property without an order to BMW, which was the lien holder, the state violated the statute
Yes.
And presumably, the owners, the property rights of your client?
Yes, Your Honor.
In what way?
Because he and or they are still the owners of the vehicle, and they certainly have the right to pursue return of the property through the forfeiture statute. And
which they don't now if the car's been sold.
Well, yes and no. As Judge Tolliver said, they have what they're left with at this point, or as we thought they were left with after his dismissal, is a claim for damages from the state.
A claim for damages against the state for releasing possession of the car. But assuming for the moment that the lien holder, BMW, has also sold the car, your
yes.
position is there would be a different claim
against
BMW for damages, correct? Or not correct?
Yes, actually there would be, because under the statutory scheme there's no provision, and I've had, at least my experience with Superior Court is that they will not order attorney's fees or interest, although in one case that was done in some sense, and there's no loss of use right.
I'm not sure I understand your answer. The state violated a statute according
yes.
to your version of the case, and apparently that it's undisputed that they released the car.
Correct.
We'll assume that that was in violation of the statute. So, as Judge Tolliver said, there would be a remedy and damages against the state. BMW, which had a possessory right under its financing contract as a lien holder, took possession of the car. If there's a claim against BMW for damages, then presumably that would be because BMW violated some independent duty to the plaintiff. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
All right. What duty, if any, was violated by BMW?
The intent of the Replevin action was to bring to BMW's attention the fact that they had a duty to preserve the goods until the Superior Court had made a determination of whether or not the forfeiture were proper. In other words, they were on notice that they were unlawfully put in possession of the vehicle and that they should keep it and hold it pending further order of the court. So that the wrong...
When did they get that notice? What happened is, on, let's say, day one, the car gets possessed, right, by the state?
Yes.
How many days elapsed between the day the car left your client's possession and the day it was handed over to BMW? Do we know?
The very next day.
Okay. How does BMW know, when it gets a car back from the state, that there's something improper about the way this process has been accomplished?
First of all, BMW had been having discussions with the state before the seizure, because the state, through Detective Pope, requested documentation about the purchase of the vehicle. And they had discussions right up until apparently the time that it was actually seized about whether or not BMW would repossess, essentially, take possession of it once it was taken by the state.
But that doesn't answer my question. How does BMW know that the forfeiture order had not been properly signed and entered?
Well, they would know initially that it hadn't happened. The statute requires that the state give notice and that the owners of the property have 45 days to file a petition for the return. And that, of course, that time period had not run initially.
So what you're saying is that as a matter of law, they were deemed to know what the statute provides, and since the statute provides 45 days to contest a forfeiture, BMW knew that it could not rightfully take possession of the car until 45 days had elapsed? Is that what you're saying?
Until 45 days from notice to the owners, yes, essentially.
So obviously, if they took possession the day after the forfeiture, they know that the statute has not been complied with.
Yes, because they're getting it at the instance of Detective Pope, not an order of the court.
Okay, and at that point, if I follow your theory, at that point, BMW was at risk, if you will, if it chose to dispose of that car, which it did.
Yes.
And that the damage to your client is that BMW should have held on to the car or refused to take possession of it, one or the other, until the court process had been accomplished.
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems then that there are two types of notice that are involved here. One is this imputed notice or assumed or presumed notice that BMW had that under the law the seizure would not have any final effect until the court validated it.
Yes.
And the other type of notice was the actual notice that your client gave to BMW in the form of a letter, correct?
In the form of a complaint for replevin.
A complaint for replevin.
Yes.
There was never any demand letter?
No.
All right. So
not to my knowledge, Your Honor. I don't remember doing that because I filed it quickly to be sure
right.
that.
Well, but the notice that the second type of notice that BMW had, therefore, would be notice of a claim.
Yes. Actual notice of the basis for the claim.
And are you relying on both forms of notice? In your brief, the only reference that I saw to BMW knowing that anything was amiss was the filing of the replevin action.
Yes, that's correct.
So factually, what you're saying is the state had no right to seize the car, but they did. They immediately gave it to BMW. And you immediately told BMW, give me my car back through the replevin action because you have no right to keep it because the state had no right to take it and give it to you.
I agree, Your Honor, except that the state did have a right to seize it pursuant to the statute. They didn't have the right to forfeit it absent a court order.
Right. I understand that.
So, yes, but other than that, yes. And although immediately might not be quite accurate, the car
Probably.
Was certainly within the possession of BMW, and that was confirmed by BMW before I filed the complaint for replevin. I contacted their representative, who had been in touch with Detective Pope.
Now, what does the record reflect with respect to the state's position on forfeiture? The state seizes the car, and then they deliver it to BMW. What do we have in the record that would reflect the state took the position the car had been forfeited? We're giving a forfeited car to BMW.
Well, the state has not said that it was forfeited, but they have acknowledged that it was seized and was in their possession. I filed a petition for return of property in the Superior Court. That's in the appendix. The state is not required to respond to that. I've served interrogatories, I've deposed Detective Pope, I mean, discovery has proceeded, and I've written to the court, Superior Court, requesting a trial date.
So why isn't your real claim for damages against the state?
Because I cannot get all of the damages that I can get, presumably, from BMW, if proven.
And why is that?
Because the forfeiture statute only contemplates the return of the property if I'm successful on that petition. It doesn't include any damages for any loss of use, any diminution of value while it is in the hands of BMW.
But you would get the value of the car. If they couldn't return it, you would get the value of the car.
Presumably, yes. I mean, obviously that would be the claim, and it is the claim, yes. There's a deficiency balance plus.
And you would have that claim against the state.
That's, as Judge Tolliver said, yes, that's what we're left with as a result of his ruling.
So then where did Judge Tolliver go wrong? What's the reversible error with regard to BMW?
He should have ordered the immediate return of the vehicle to the custody of the state, as required by statute, pending final determination on the petition for return of property.
All right, well, he didn't do that. The car is gone. Why hasn't that issue become moot?
For one reason, Your Honor, it's not moot, because certainly we still have a damages claim, as I've said, against BMW and against the state. It's also not moot in the sense that this issue will never reach this court if there's not a determination that from this court that the Superior Court cannot permit the vehicle to be repossessed when it's supposed to.
So you're invoking the exception to the mootness doctrine.
Yes, Your
about
Honor.
Capable of repetition yet evading review.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's precisely where we are. I've been handling forfeiture matters for 10 to 15 years, and I've never seen an asset seizure warrant. I have seen many improper seizures where there's been a return, but I've never seen it done in the context of a separate warrant, totally separate and apart from any current allegation of illegal activity.
But the review you're asking us to undertake, what you're asking us to do is to declare, I understand that the state violated the law by turning the car over.
Yes.
But that's not in the context of a claim against the state. It's in the context of a claim against a third party. Isn't that a little procedurally odd?
It is odd, Your Honor, but in thinking about that, I thought, well, the claim, this is only part of the claim because the statute doesn't permit me to file a replevin action against the state. That's very explicit in 4784.
But you could file a damages action, right?
Which essentially I did with a petition for return because at that point...
Why does that constitute a damages action if the state doesn't even have to answer it?
Well, they have to respond, I mean, in a sense, but they don't file an answer in the sense that there is another pleading. We simply proceed with discovery.
So is this companion litigation against the state currently going on?
Yes. As I said, discovery is proceeding, and I've requested a trial date.
Assuming we were to reverse, would the two matters, that is the claim against BMW and the claim against the state, proceed as a combined claim, or would they proceed separately and independently of each other?
There's no reason they can't go either way, Your Honor. We only have the one claim active at this point, but they certainly could be consolidated because since the vehicle sold, their claims for damages.
But let me just make sure I understand. Is it your position that what BMW did wrong was not to return the car after it had actual notice that there was a claim that it was unlawfully holding the car?
Yes.
And that claim, that is, that the notice of the claim was the petition to return?
No, the notice of the claim was the complaint for replevin.
I'm sorry, the complaint for replevin.
Yes.
And that complaint for replevin was filed how many days after the seizure?
I don't have that in front of me, Your Honor.
Your position is that although you didn't ask for a stay in any respect, BMW was on notice that you wanted the car back, and to the extent that they disposed of the car during the pendency of the litigation, they did so at their own peril.
Yes.
And they're responsible to your client for damages if Judge Tolliver is reversed and he should have ordered the car returned.
At this point, since the vehicle was sold, or has been sold since Judge Tolliver's decision, yes, we're only left with a claim for damages.
Right. But you have 2 minutes of your total time left, which was for rebuttal. Do you want to save that?
Yes, Your Honor, if I may.
Good morning, Mr. Davis.
Good morning, Justice Holland.
How are you?
Justice Berger. Justice Jacobs. Stephen Davis here on behalf of BMW Financial Services. I may veer slightly, obviously, from my prepared presentation. It sounds as though the court may still have some interest in hearing my feeling about the interlocutory appeal issue, if that's still an issue with the court. It sounds like it's of importance to you. My interpretation of Judge Tolliver's decision is that based on my motion, which was a motion as to the entire complaint, my motion to dismiss was not limited to the replevin action. My motion to dismiss clearly was a procedural, there's no substantive claim, therefore the claim can't go forward. It was as to the entire complaint. That was certainly my intention, and I have been working under the assumption, apparently as Mr. Ahern has, that Judge Tolliver's oral decision following the argument on my motion to dismiss, in fact, dismissed of the entire case, the replevin action, and count two for damages against my client.
Your position is we've got the car, we have it properly, we don't have to give you the car, and we don't owe you any money.
I think that's it in a nutshell. And let me explain very briefly the basis for that position. It seems to me that what this case has expanded in its nature from what the complaint, I think we have to look back at the original document. This is a complaint for Raplevin slash damages against BMW Financial. This was not a complaint including the state, that the state violated a statutory mandate. The case has morphed into a discussion of issues that I don't think were really, frankly, part of the initial complaint.
Does the record reflect that Mr. Ahern's client was in default?
I think the record is patently clear about that. If you look at the contract, the installment sales contract, which in my position is the document that establishes the rights and obligations between the parties to this lawsuit, not the statute that may or may not have been violated by the state. I'm not a party to that statute. When you look at the rights and obligations and duties between my client and Mr. Goodman, it's created and controlled by the sales agreement. And the sales agreement clearly states in paragraph 15A7, the default provision, that if the vehicle is seized, confiscated, or levied upon by governmental legal process, the purchaser is in default. I don't think the language could be more clear. It's not disputed that the state seized the vehicle. Clearly, the Goodmans were in default under the terms of the contract, and it is the contract that controls, as I said, the conduct between the parties to this litigation.
So let's assume, just for purposes of discussion, that the state, somebody in charge of seizing vehicles, just had it in for these people. There was absolutely no basis for ordering the seizure of it, and they seized the BMW. You have a contract that says if there's a seizure, that's a default. You don't have any obligation under any circumstances to look into whether there actually was a valid authorized seizure or whether there was an act that was not a lawful act of the state?
I think that's an interesting point. I think the short answer I would give you is no, but I'll give you an expanded answer based on the facts in this case, which I think are very compelling and mitigate any wrongful conduct on the part of BMW. And by the way, let me also say that, again, this case has morphed to some extent of an argument of wrongful sale of the vehicle by BMW after the Raplevin action was filed, which to me seems like an independent and different cause of action than was ever asserted in the complaint for Raplevin to begin with. That's a new issue, I think, that's come up for the first time here in front of the Supreme Court.
Before you respond, I just wanted to amplify or clarify Justice Berger's question. Your argument is that there is no implied requirement that the seizure be lawful or at least in good faith?
Not with regard to my client. The statute does not address third parties at all. The statute addresses the relationship between the state and the party from whom property is seized. Now, again, in this case, understand,
if your client knew that the seizure was capricious, a violation of law, your client would still have full rights to declare a default?
Well, I think, again, that's a philosophical question that isn't consistent with the facts in this case, because in this case, you have to understand that we were presented with...
It's intended not as a philosophical question, but as a hypothetical legal question.
Well, I think that, obviously, if my client somehow clearly knew, if you assume they clearly knew that the vehicle was improperly seized, and such that it would be perhaps bad faith for them to look at the contract provision of if governmental seizure, I think we'd be in a different position.
So you would agree that there's at least an implied good faith requirement?
I think every commercial contractual relationship perhaps has that provision. I don't think this is unique.
Answer is yes.
I think if they clearly knew that, they probably would have taken a different course of conduct.
Well, let's go back to Justice Berger's question.
So then aren't we left with an issue of fact as to the extent to which BMW knew that the seizure was unlawful?
I think that, again, I think that The question that you posed was that we clearly know. I think there were facts in this situation that clearly mitigated us knowing.
But we're not here deciding facts. Mm-hmm. This case was dismissed on a motion to dismiss.
Agreed.
Which means that under any set of facts that could be proven, the plaintiff has a right to go forward if the plaintiff could prevail. So that's why I'm suggesting to you, what if the facts here were to establish that the state was unlawfully seized this vehicle and that BMW knew or had reason to know that there was something unlawful about the process?
I don't know that the contractual provision seems to me very clear that if it's seized. Again, I guess in the right set of circumstances, if my client was in complicity somehow with the state and we knew that they just had it out for him and it was patently illegal, but in a situation where you have a warrant signed by a Superior Court justice based on probable cause and my client is aware of that, and understand, we did not dispose of this vehicle. We held on to it. Until
after you knew that the owner was contesting the possession.
We held on to it until after the Replevin action was dismissed and Judge Tolliver said that we could go forward and sell the vehicle. We purposely held on to it until after the Replevin action was decided. And it seems to me that once the Replevin action is decided and we have a court order telling us that this case is without merit, and that we can sell the vehicle.
Well, if you think it's necessary to hold on to it until you got a decision from the Superior Court, then what about his right to appeal?
I think that my position was, Your Honor, with regard to my client, is that it was prudent to go ahead and sell the vehicle because, again, I think that the conduct that is being challenged here is not the conduct of BMW, and I've never heard that as part of the complaint. The complaint simply was, yes, we agree that your contract allows you to take the vehicle back, that you're in lawful possession of the vehicle. However, the state violated the statute. Our position seemed to be very clear that Mr. Ahern may have a valid cause of action against the state, not only for the petition for return to property. If his concern is he doesn't have a full remedy under the statutory provision, I think he has a separate cause of action for damages, which would provide him with a full remedy.
My question's intended to be a hypothetical to understand how things would normally work and how they worked in this case. If the seizure is an event of default, I would assume that in my hypothetical case, normally, the seized vehicle would be in the possession of the state at some impound, and that you'd have to go somewhere and prove there was an event of default, and then you'd get the car back. But in this particular case, the two merged. The state seized the vehicle and gave it to your client. So you never had to demonstrate there was really an event of default to anyone to get the car back. Is that correct?
Factually, that is correct. The vehicle was simply turned over by the state with the representation that it had been seized pursuant to a warrant that we could...
And Mr. Ahern's position is, we agree that a valid seizure is an event of default that would entitle you to get the car back, but you skipped the process of proving that it was an event of default because the car was delivered to you, and that's what they're really contesting.
It was my client's position that it didn't skip the process. I mean, quite frankly, in practical terms, I'm not sure that they've ever faced this issue before, certainly not in Delaware. I don't know that they had any inkling initially that somehow there was a different process that should have been followed. You know, they had representations from this Delaware State Police that we have your vehicle, we know you have a security lien, so here, we'll give it back to you.
I mean, you have a contract, and there are a lot of events of default, non-payment, and as I understood it, you were exercising your contractual right to take the vehicle back because the seizure was an event of default.
Correct.
But as a practical matter, you didn't have to go to court to do that because the car was delivered to you. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, obviously, in practical terms, in the real world, when there is in the financing companies' opinion under the contract. There's a default provision. There are a number of ways in which they can come into possession of the vehicle. A replevin action against the owner is certainly not the only one. That's only if the owner won't willfully give it back. They may demand that it come back. If it's in a garage, they will go seize it and hook it. So it's not unusual for...
Well, what would you have done in this case if the car had been seized by the state police and there was a chain link fence where all seized cars were kept? How would you have gotten it back?
You're asking me to speculate. I don't know.
Well, no, you're their lawyer. They tell you, they come into you in my hypothetical and they say the state has seized this BMW. It's at the state police lot. We want it. That's an event of default. And my question to you is, as their lawyer in my hypothetical, what do you advise them?
I think it's initially I would simply suggest that they write a letter to Delaware State Police. Because the statute in question specifically says that that the seizing of a vehicle is subject to the security interest of the secured party. I would cite that statutory section and say that we have a contract, the vehicle's been seized, and therefore is an act of default, and request that possession be granted to my client. And hopefully that would happen.
Without any notice to the owner?
I suspect the owner would be noticed, and the owner routinely, once BMW believes that there is an event of default under this contract or any contract, a certified letter is always sent to the purchaser of the vehicle, putting them on notice that they believe, and asking them to either turn the vehicle over or make some other plans to give the vehicle back, and if they refuse to do so, then we initiate a replevin action.
Right, which I think is what we're focusing on, is the fact that you got this vehicle without going through any process at all. And as a result, there was never any determination by a court that you were authorized to collect that vehicle, in the sense that you may say it's crystal clear there was a seizure, the contract says seizure is an event of default, boom, we win. Well, not until a judge says you win. And that's after the other side says, well, wait a second, this seizure was bogus for whatever reason, or whatever the facts may turn out to be. I'm just, I'm not suggesting what they will be. So you're saying that self-help in the form of a detective who was being friendly or whatever, self-help is just as good or is no different than having a judicial determination that you're entitled to repossess the car?
I think there are two-part answer to that question. I would agree that generally self-help is a perfectly acceptable remedy for a financing company to get repossession of a vehicle in an event of default. I would also respectfully suggest that in this case there was a judicial determination made while the vehicle was still in possession. In other words, this whole situation could have been reversed judicially if that remedy was believed to be appropriate. Once a superior court, and there was a court order that...
No. I'm not talking about the trial court's decision on the complaint that was filed. I'm talking about you obtained possession of this car through self-help, but it wasn't the kind of self-help where the car is parked on the street and you can come with your tow truck and take it away. This was self-help that the state gave you, but no judge had decided that you were entitled to take possession of that car.
I would agree, although I think that in the event of a financing company making the determination that there is an event of default under any contract, and calling a local garage and asking them to go out and pull someone's vehicle out of their driveway, there's never a judicial termination before that act of self-help happens. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on you look at it, depending on whose side you're on, the judicial review of that process from self-help always takes place after the self-help. If the purchaser believes that they were that self-help was wrongfully used and that they were not in default and still had a right to the vehicle, that's when they would file a replevin action. That's when... That's when judicial review takes place, after self-help is used. That's always the case.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Let's assume that the day after your client took possession of the car, whether by self-help or otherwise, your client receives a summons, a copy of a complaint for replevin, N.A., which claims that, that the seizure was unlawful and asks for a judicial determination of that. Is it the case that your client in those circumstances would not sell the car, not dispose of the car until there was a judicial resolution of that issue?
Your Honor, I don't know. Again, I don't know what my client's normal practice is. I can tell you that in the cases that in which I have dealt with them, if they would ask me whether or not they should sell a vehicle under the circumstances, my advice would always be, in fact, in this case, was don't do anything with it until we know what the court's going to do. And
because the because your client's rights will depend upon whether or not the seizure was lawful, correct?
I guess that's true. I certainly don't want to expose my client to...
Is that correct?
That is correct. Exactly.
And in fact, in this case, your client held onto the car as if it had gotten fairly immediate notice that there was an issue of the legality of the seizure.
That's correct. They did get fairly quick notice, I might add. The answer is yes.
And your client did not sell the car until Judge Tolliver dismissed the case against your client.
That's correct.
Help us understand the precedent that I'm going to operate here, because what we have is your client with a lien and a default provision saying if there's a seizure, your client can get the car and there's an event of default. And yet, because of the seizure, we have this statute that says before you forfeit your vehicle, you get to contest that. And so theoretically, you can have the seized vehicle being contested, its forfeiture being contested in a proceeding, and yet you have this existing event of default that there was a seizure. And somewhere along the line, either your client can go forward, notwithstanding dependency of the forfeiture proceeding, or they can't. And what Judge Tolliver seems to be saying is, if the state seizes the car, that's an event of default that's basically irrevocable for purposes of BMW Financial, and they can move forward. And then in the forfeiture proceeding, if it turns out that you're entitled to get your car back, but you don't because BMW Financial has sold it, then your only remedy is against the state for damages. Is that the way you see them playing out?
I think yes, in this case, perhaps because the situation is slightly unique, and that is, it appears as though, and I'm not intimately familiar with the statute or what practically happens to know if right or wrong, but it appears as though the state jumped the gun and turned it over to BMW. So yes, I think in this situation, that's correct, and it's slightly unique compared to what may happen at other times. But again, I will confess I'm not familiar with the statute and other instances.
Well, that's why I asked the hypothetical about what would you do if it had been in the compound, because that would be the situation where the state has it.
Correct.
You know that there's a seizure, which is an event of default. And depending on how we decide this case, what you seem to be saying is that because of the seizure, you would have a right to bring an action to get the car out of the compound and go sell it. And the forfeiture proceeding could go forward, but there's not going to be a car. And at the end of the day, the only conclusion to the forfeiture proceeding can be damages against the state.
I think that's correct. And my perspective is that a vehicle is not necessarily unique property. The statute also permits the state to take real property. And we talked previously about the notion of specific performance. I think that situation is different. If the owner of the property clearly can't be compensated, arguably, for the loss of real property, but a vehicle is certainly not unique. And in fact, if ultimately there is an act of default, cars, if BMW is feeling that cars don't obviously get improve over time in value, and it's really to everybody's interest to get this to an auction as quickly as possible because it maximizes the value of the vehicle, and hopefully then it would reduce any potential damages to the purchaser of the vehicle.
Thank you.
Thank you. My time.
Your Honors, with the brief time remaining, first of all, I apologize. I didn't know the answer to the question. I filed the complaint for Riplevin on March 14th, 2003. It had been seized on February 5th, 2003, and given to BMW on February 6th. The one problem that I have with, and it was highlighted by the last question and answer to Mr. Davis, is that the statute doesn't provide any remedy for an award of damages. In this case, I suppose that's the claim that we have because there is no BMW. The statute is absolutely crystal clear that the state has an obligation to preserve it and that my client has a right to the return of it.
So your position would be that the statutory provision takes precedence over the contract, and that if the car had not been turned over but was inside the chain link fence, when BMW Financial said, give us the car you seized because that's an event of default, the state would have said, we can't give it to you under the statute because we have a duty to preserve it until this statutory process is concluded.
Yes. And that BMW was on notice of that, certainly from me, and in the argument that followed the filing of the complaint, and so they had no right to dispose of it. And they face no loss. If the vehicle is in the possession of the state, they are, under the statute, their security interest is preserved. I mean, the state can still seize the vehicle, and in some cases they do. The state will get a forfeiture order, and they will either keep the vehicle and pay out of the sleep fund whatever security interest there is, or sell the vehicle, keep some of the proceeds, and hand over the balance of the proceeds. And that's what should happen, pending an order from the court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement and also take a brief recess.
Please rise.